The last time I gave this talk, it was supposed to be 12 minutes, and it was in Europe. So since we have an hour, there's just going to be a lot of cat photos. That's okay. But I figured it's cool, right? The whole thing. I just forego the whole presentation for the sake of the cats, because that's what we all want to see. So you can hear me, everyone, okay? Yeah? No? More? More mic? Mr. Tech Lead? Can you mic a little bit higher? Good. Anyone can hear me now? All right. Oh, we're still on the screen. Okay. So my name's Eric, and I just quit my job at Facebook, so that's awesome. But I, while I was there, what I was doing was promoting this notion of social design to developers and product managers and brand strategy, whatever, all over the place. And usually, it was pretty much focused on the technical implementation or so, but since we have luxury of time, yes.
God. Jesus.
Is this better? No. What if I just hold it? Yeah? Okay, this works. Yeah, all right, okay. I have the unfortunate issue of not being able to speak very loudly. That's the Jewish nose from New York. It doesn't really work. So since we have the luxury of an hour session, I wanted to start by giving you a little bit of background about myself from the personal level, a little bit about my childhood, because we all are still kind of children at heart, and I think it's really important that we understand where we came from before we understand like who we are now. So this right here is a room in my mom's house, which is filled with hundreds of little porcelain and glass animals that I spent my childhood collecting. And they're all organized in this town with houses and trees and fences and cars. And they're all grouped into different areas. I've got like the woodland creatures and the cats. And I spent a lot of time doing this. they're all organized into families. And I even, like, would handwrite menus for the restaurant. And my Saturday mornings, I would actually, you know, process requests for food and do the taxes and everything. There was a casino. Suffice to say, I did not have a lot of friends growing up. actually, I felt really out of place in school. I didn't have a lot of friends. I didn't really fit in very much. Kids were kind of mean. And that the rule of this town was that there were no people. It was all animals. Because people were judgmental and mean and emotional. And animals were just doing their thing. They were playing pool. So I would come home every day after school and just play in here and kind of curate this collection over time. And at the same time, when I was in school and away from this town, I still kind of felt out of place. So I started drawing cartoons. And I drew this little squirrel character using like all my notebooks. And I also drew some pirate characters and other things, and I kind of developed this whole little world with all the names and descriptions and storytelling of all this stuff. And then we got our computer. It was a Windows 95 with, you know, awesome Microsoft stuff, and I immediately took to the best graphic program out there on the computer system, Microsoft Paint. It was great. I could totally take all of my planning that was going on in my head and actually organize now in Paint how I was going to lay out this town for my animals. You know, and I spent some time, I got a little bit better, I started to do a little bit more architectural stuff. Yeah, Microsoft Paint, pixel by pixel. And I also started to draw the cartoons as well, so I did all these pirate characters, and they had all these different pieces coming together. I even animated them painstakingly, pixel by pixel, in Microsoft Paint. And I realized that I loved this so much that I wanted to go to school for computer graphics in hopes that I would get to model them in 3D and actually animate them into something. But a funny thing happened. That was really hard. So I taught myself web programming my freshman year, and I was kind of hooked with it. because I realized it was a really great canvas for me to express all of the things that I thought made up who I was, and I could actually put it out somewhere where anyone could go look at it. So my first website was a horrible, horrible HTML table site that featured my cartoons. And it got a little bit better at it over time, made it a little bit more architectural, featured some of my 3D models, etc. And then I got even better in it, and I added more stuff, some of the stuff I was writing, and more information about myself and my projects, and I thought this was great. I can have like this canvas of self-expression to do everything now. But I realized that even though I literally had like 20 sites all about me, I realized that no matter how many sites I had and how full and in-depth it was, I was still really lonely. The whole point was that I was supposed to try to showcase who I was to other people, and I was still just sitting behind the screen with my stuff. So I was this one little speck in like a universe of different websites, especially in the blogging era when everyone and their mother had a website. Everyone and their mother had a website? They did. I was just a star. So, not a rising star, but just, you know, a speck. So it was frustrating. And I realized that sharing must be a two-way thing. In other words, we need to have a place where I can be myself to share with other people, and they can do the same thing with me. And so, as a freshman, I joined Facebook in 2004 when it first came out, and I realized this is great, because now I can create a profile of all my stuff, and everyone's doing the same thing, and that means that I can come and see other people. I never have to feel alone like a lonely island. So I started doing the same thing, too. I built a Facebook clone later that year for my high school friends to keep in touch with each other, and it had the same kind of stuff. I built a wordplay site where people from around the internet could come and play these wordplay games with each other and kind of talk. And I, again, was not really alone. There were obviously hundreds and hundreds of sites that were geared towards social interaction. But only one of them really kind of made it through the last 10 years to become like the foundation of this next generation social web, and that is Facebook. So I was kind of excited to actually go work there and do some of this stuff. But there's a reason why this works that none of the other sites kind of had. And that's kind of like what we'll talk about a little bit today, is this notion of social design. So it's a term that is used everywhere by everyone and their mother and their grandfather. Social media strategy, social design this. We got to work on our social. Got to be more social. Even Mark Zuckerberg. Things should be more social, right? And like you read like books and articles and all these things about telling you like what social is. And honestly, I really think that you can figure it out if you just look really closely at yourself. So I want you to forget everything that you've ever heard about social media, social design, and focus on one thing, and that is this notion of identity. So what do I mean by that? Well, when we grow up as children, we have a very self-centric view of the world. It's not because we're selfish, it's just because, you know, we want to survive, so we just generally take and take and take and make sure that we can get what we need. Plus, we have our parents that always tell us that we're a special little flower and that we're unique, and I took that to heart. I thought she was right. The doctor said I was special, too, but that was probably different. And then you grow up and you realize, well, you're not the only one. There's actually a lot of different flowers out there, and they're all struggling to get the same light and water and energy, and it's a little bit daunting because you thought originally that you had these special feelings and special thoughts and a special view of the world, and then everyone else is doing the same. So even though you're part of this society of people doing the same thing, you still kind of feel like a little bit different. And this is like the inherent struggle that humanity has always had for its existence, is how do we come to terms with the fact that while we are all kind of the same, we're also still different? It's a big question we want to get answered. So identity gives us a stable sense and awareness and understanding of ourselves, because we realize that when the universe and the environment, which is inherently unstable, becomes more uncertain to us, the only thing we really have to depend on is our sense of self. And so our whole lives we just spend trying to figure out, well, who are we? What do we like? What do we not like? Where do we want to be? Where do we feel comfortable? And one way we go about doing that is actually by altering the environment around us so that we can make it a little bit more stable for ourselves. So, for example, in the wildlife, this bird will take these little blue sticks from around the jungle and curate his nest, which is cool, kind of making it a little bit more of a safe place to live. And you see the same thing with other animals. Sometimes you give your dog a treat and it like runs back to its bed and just kind of keeps it there. Or your cats or squirrels with their acorns. And we do the same thing too. I also collected Beanie Babies. That's right. This is only half of my collection. I was really big on animals. Let's just say that. But it's not just me. I mean, we all have an inherent need to collect and curate things because we define ourselves by a collection. So it could be a collection of little porcelain animals, or it could be Beanie Babies, or it could be your movie collection. Obviously, there are lots of movies out there, but the ones that you have in your collection are the ones that say something about who you are, say something about what you like. Same thing with music. This just exploded in the last 10 years because they tapped into a real need. Obviously, lots of other kinds of music out there. You want to find more. The music collection that you have kind of makes you feel more safe, more comfortable. You like playing the songs over and over and over again. So the real trick is trying to figure out what things you should bring into your inner circle and what things are kind of like out there for everyone else. And fortunately, we live in a society where we don't really have a lot of options. I'm just kidding. We have 20 different kinds of butter in the supermarket. And we have 67 varieties of cereal and like 20 brands of chocolate. I like chocolate, but there's 20 different brands of chocolate. And of course, with advertising and all of this brand stuff, they're all telling me, well, you should like this chocolate because this chocolate is meeting your needs. And this chocolate is perfectly for you because this one meets your needs. And you're like, well, I just want chocolate. I get Wheat Chex now from the cereal aisle because it's simple and it's healthy and it works. It does the job. I also don't eat a lot anyway, so it's okay. So the point is that there are just an inordinate amount of options that we have out in the world now of things to pick to bring into our inner circle. All of these different choices. And, you know, 3,000 years ago, we fundamentally were the same people, but we didn't have so many options. And you could argue that life was harder because there was less freedom, but it's actually a little bit harder now because it's just so paralyzing. And so the truth is that we do not change as quickly as we can change our environment. That's kind of a pro and con of being human, is that we actually have the ability to change the things around us. But fundamentally, biologically, psychologically, we really can't cope with so many different things. We kind of need simplicity. So when we're sitting there in this environment of so many different things to pick from, food, music, movies, places to go, things to wear, friends to have, it's a little bit daunting. It's a little bit scary. It's like we need a little bit of a buffer zone. It's like, whoa, I need to take a step back here. I need a little bit of help. And fortunately, we have evolved to have that help in the form of community, which is great. And community can be defined a lot of different ways. I'm going to define it here as a group whose members share common values and principles and to whom we can look to for support and feedback. In other words, in our struggle to figure out what things we want in our lives and what things we don't, everyone else is doing the same thing, so we can actually utilize them for help and for recommendations, which is great. We do this in the real world. Now, community is actually a really great tool evolutionarily because it helps you protect against danger. For example, if you are a deer and there is a lion, you are better off in a pack than individually. Plus, the pack can actually help you to get food better, to get shelter, to keep warm. And even though we all kind of feel individual, we still all kind of huddle together when it really counts. Much of the animal kingdom is based on this sort of tribe notion, family structure, etc. And with people, it's a little bit more flexible. We define our communities by our friends, the people that we have hand-selected to be part of our sort of inner circle because we trust them, and they trust us, and we trust them to make good recommendations for us as we go about our lives. And that's why we have them. And the reason why this works, again, is because of this notion of trust, which I'm defining as an inherent recognition of stability and sameness in something or someone. So stability we want, yes, but sameness means that you can see yourself in that thing. So I really like this song. This song speaks to me. Jim is my best friend. You know, we connect. And so trust is really, really important. And we have all different kinds of relationships in our lifetime. And if we were to be really, really nerdy about it and graph it, which is what I'm going to do, and we put the strength of the relationship on the x-axis from really formal to really intimate, and the length of the relationship on the y from really long-lasting to really ephemeral, we would have maybe our friends and our spouse and our parents in the upper right quadrant, relationships that are really long-lasting, really intimate. We might have neighbors or coworkers, maybe your doctor, in a formal but lasting relationship area. Maybe neighbors or clubs or past relationships in the intimate, ephemeral, people you were once close with but not really for that long. And then kind of everything else in the formal, ephemeral area. Brands and services, customer service, maybe your doorman, unless you're really, really good friends with your doorman. I don't have a doorman. I would like a doorman. So the important thing to really note about this chart is that we hold all of our strong ties in the upper right quadrant. This is where we have all of our trusted relationships. And what they can do, the people in this group, is they can actually cast out these fish hooks into other parts of the graph here and make recommendations of other things that you should bring into your trusted quadrant. You should meet Sarah. She's a really nice girl. That's my mom. You should buy this song. It's perfect for you. You should wear that shirt you always look good in. All of these things that help us sort of trust other things out there, which is great. So again, it's not just us individually facing the crazy environment out there. We have help in the form of community. And the reason why that community exists is because this notion of trust. Trust is how we separate what should be in our community from what should be outside of it. But it doesn't really stop there. Just like there is a gap between the environment and the community, there is also a gap between the identity and the community. And that sort of describes how we make ourselves heard by others and how we get information from them. And that's where social design is really concerned. This gap right here. And so I'm going to label it with the term conversation, which I will define as the exchange of thoughts and ideas and information and stories. It's how we give information to the community and how we get information from it, all for the point of getting to know ourselves better and having a more stable sense of self. So social design is a product strategy that encourages and facilitates conversation, with a key emphasis on the word design, which is really important. A really good friend of mine who's a designer in San Francisco defines it this way. Design is a solution to a problem that the environment presents us. That's kind of important to understand. It's a response to an environmental issue to meet a need. So there's a lot of different kinds of design. There's evolutionary design. This lizard, for example. This lizard lives in the deserts of Australia, where it rains maybe twice a year. And so it has evolved over millions of years to have these thorns, which look pretty gross, but also funnel the rainwater into its mouth. And even though it looks kind of weird, it doesn't matter because it solves the problem. It stays alive. Here it is. Or the anglerfish in the deep, dark ocean, right? It developed electricity so it could see in front of it to eat other prey. And it looks like the grossest thing ever, but it doesn't matter because it solves the problem. And that's the thing about design. Design never has any kind of subjective aspect to it. It doesn't matter if you like it, if you don't like it, if it makes you feel good. It matters if it actually solves the problem. We do the same thing. We've been able to figure out how to build cities to get all of our basic needs all together in one place. We get shelter, we get each other, we get food, we get water. It's great. We built this. We changed our environment. Sometimes we change our environment to match the environment. If you guys have ever been to Amsterdam, they build the buildings at a 5-degree slope forward. And why? Well, it's so crowded there. All the buildings are so tight and they're so small. And all the stairs are so tiny that they can't bring the furniture up the stairs. So they actually hoist it on the outside through the windows of the second, third, fourth, fifth floor. And the reason for the tilt is so that it doesn't hit the building on the way up. Kind of neat. Or also in Europe, in the public urinals, they actually etch a fly into the urinal. I was just there last year. It's really weird. I saw it. The reason? Well, a lot of drunk people use public restrooms, and they don't actually pay anyone to clean them like they do here. So they want to make sure that the urine stays in the bowl. So while you're there and you're drunk and you're peeing, there's a fly, and so you naturally want to aim for it. I have tried that. It's true. You do. The best kind of design is the one that gets people to act naturally, the way that they kind of want to, not the ones that force them into anything. So, solves the problem. The urine stays in the bowl. The restrooms stay clean. There's also the Eames chair, which I'm sure many of you have seen before. Post-World War II, Charles Eames wants to create a cheap way to manufacture comfortable furniture in large quantities, because most of the furniture was, like, over the top back then. And so he uses plywood, but he designs it with plastic molds, and you get this really comfortable chair that's really cheap. And it's still very popular today. Solves the problem that he had at the time. Creates a new environment. So again, design is the solution to the problem that the environment presents us. So when we're talking about social design, the environment we're talking about is the community. They're trying to get information from them and also share it back. So, when we look at technology, we see that conversation online isn't anything new. It's actually been around since the beginning. You guys remember these AOL chat rooms? How many hours were spent talking to random people with red text and capital letters and emoticons and all that stuff? That was my high school age. And you could meet some interesting people, but for the most part, it was kind of chaotic. And then it actually got evolved into these new forum systems that are still really prominent today. They're like everywhere. And they're really engaged. You know, there's a lot of posts going on, a lot of views, a lot of people there, a lot of conversation. It's going on. But they're not really working. I know. Please, if you've ever used one before, you know that the experience is kind of subpar from what you're used to now. So, number one biggest problem with these is that they're anonymous. There's no notion of real identity. And if the whole point of social design is to get to know who you are and have a stable sense of identity, then starting with no identity is kind of a fundamental problem. You know, you look through these pages and you get these usernames, which doesn't really tell you much. Sometimes they have avatars in the form of these random graphics, unless they actually look like a skull, in which case, I'm sorry. But for the most part, you have no information about these people at all. And when you go to their profiles, you just see statistical information. You know, when they joined, what their rating is, how many posts they made. Not really helping. And so because there is no real identity in these systems, we have no trusted community. And if the whole goal is to have a trusted community to get information from, and there isn't a trusted community, then that's a pretty terrible baseline to start with. So what about the actual conversation itself? Like if we discuss how these things work. Well, when you look down these forum pages, everything is ordered categorically, hierarchically, because the internet was very big on curating data, so this is a very good data representation of that. And you read down these things and you get these statistical information. Hey, there's thousands of posts here in this one thread. And you got to figure, well, if there's thousands of posts in this one thread, what are the chances that it's really talking about the same thing at the very bottom of the screen that it was talking about before? Probably not. So the content in general is just not discoverable. You're required to do a lot of work to look around and scroll around to try to figure out what might be interesting. The second thing is that all of the information and text that goes in these things are kind of this giant rich text editor where it's just everything is just dropped in line. There's no structure. It's really chaotic, actually, because you don't really know what people are talking about. I mean, they can quote each other, but that's just quoting more chaos. So it's really hard to find actually structured data in terms of the links and the content people are talking about. So, yeah, data is unstructured. That's kind of frustrating, too. Third is when you look down at these forums, at all the things going on, it's actually like really visually distracting. So there's like images and ratings and signatures and emoticons and all these things that get in the way of what's actually important, which is the conversation. In fact, the screen real estate that's given to the conversation is actually really, really tiny. So that's kind of a problem too. Everything is very visually unfocused and distracting. And the other thing is when you look down at some of these threads, you know, they scroll for hundreds and hundreds of posts. And nobody's actually really talking to each other. They're kind of just talking to this room, which is kind of weird. You don't really know if anyone's actually interacting with each other or if they're just sort of spewing out these thoughts into a giant room. It's kind of weird. And when you go back to these pages every day, you get the same hierarchical view, which gives you a little bit of information about who updated what last, but it doesn't really tell you anything about what's relevant to you. Is anybody actually responding to my post? Is anybody talking about me? Is anybody talking about the things that I'm interested in? So there are no feedback loops. That's pretty frustrating, too. And lastly, the systems are really slow. There's no immediacy. And part of that is because, well, the technology was really bad back in the day. You know, we're really big on Ajax and JavaScript now. But it was just slow because you had to look. It took just too much time to actually absorb the information. You had to click around. It was very distracting to figure out what you wanted to read. you couldn't really find what information is relevant to you, it is slow. And that's actually a problem because there's a direct relationship between the amount of trust, the emotional bond that you form with something, and the amount of intimacy you've got. So if you're with someone else and you're coexisting in a room, that's pretty good. But as you get more sort of emotionally charged and more real-time interaction, the trust goes up. From laughing, dancing, emoting, watching sports, maybe sex, if you're into that. There's a direct relationship between trust and intimacy. So since the intimacy is kind of pretty low, there's really not a lot of trust forming. And since there is no identity or community, that's also hurting the whole thing. So when you look at all of these different points that I bring up about these old systems, it's pretty clear that the social of the past really isn't helping us do what we wanted to do with this notion of social design. And that's because, traditionally, technology tries to mimic what we've seen in the real world. When you consider that we have evolved over millions of years in a physical space with real things, and we have developed the ability to learn and remember how to use something, that's a pretty good indicator of stability. I know how to use this thing now, so it will always be like that. And then when we go into the two-dimensional digital space where anything can change all the time, it's pretty scary. We really have a hard time with that. So a lot of technology has been designed to mimic the real world because it's something we can already latch onto. It's familiar. And so you see a lot of this stuff with like Apple design, for example. So these forum systems, they actually are a lot like the real world. We've designed these tools to mimic what we see in the real world. These conversation elements. So, for example, content not discoverable. If you were to walk into a giant house with a bunch of rooms with people in it, you'd have to go to one room and talk over here, and then you'd have to go to another room and talk over here, and then you'd have to go to another room and talk over here, and you'd basically just spend your whole day going from room to room. What about getting around here in this conference? You want to go from different talks? You have to walk. It's like 20 minutes. I don't want to walk that far. The data is also unstructured. When we talk, we're just talking. You know, it's just words coming out. We don't really know what we're talking about. That's why we love having our phones when we're in conversations now, because it's like, oh, I want to look that up right now. I want structure. The other thing is we're also really terrible at explaining ourselves because there's just so many ways to tell stories. So we just kind of go on and on and on. You know those people. Visually distracting. Yeah. You ever try to pick up a girl at a really loud bar? It's really hard. You know, the music's blaring, the lights are low, there are people bumping into you, drinks are spilling, you're trying to have a conversation here. She's not listening to you. It's really frustrating. I don't speak from real experience, but sort of. Additionally, there are no feedback loops when you're sort of in these places. If we're here in this room right now and somebody's talking about something I care about in the Hilton, or if they're talking about me, I have no idea what's going on. I'm kind of left out of the loop. It's a little frustrating. Plus, I have no idea when I wake up every morning what things I should be that are like in the world that are like relevant to me right now. I'm just kind of going out in the world trying to figure it out. And lastly, slow. Well, slow. The real world is slow, but it's as fast as we know because the physical reality, there's only so much we can actually do. We are kind of at an end point here. We find that physical reality is posing an environmental limitation on our interaction with each other. We can only be in one place at one time with one group of people. It can be a little frustrating. This is all we've known, though, for a long time, so it's only recently become a problem. But the value of technology is that it can actually transcend the physical reality if it's designed for a non-physical reality. In other words, let's not mimic the real world, because it's kind of not the best indicator, of especially for interaction. It's really hindering us. So if we were to design something for a non-physical reality in the form of social design, how would we go about doing that? Well, Charles Eames, who makes those chairs, said that recognizing the need is the primary condition for design. So in other words, if we can recognize the fundamental need that we have for conversation, we could probably design something pretty good. So if only we had like a little framework to help structure and figure out what our real needs are, that would be kind of great. And thankfully, for psychology people in the room, we have this guy who did this hierarchy of needs, which is a great way to sort of organize the general human needs of the species. At the very bottom of the pyramid is our physiological needs, our need for food, our sleep, water, reproduction, hence the going to the bar. You know. Next, we have our safety needs, which is that, you know, we don't want to die. We don't want to get killed by lions or lightning. We want shelter, protection. Next is our need for belonging. We want to feel like we are part of something so that we are not feeling like we want to feel accepted by other people. Next is our need for self-esteem. We want to feel like we have a sense of purpose, sense of stability. And then there's this last one, which she's calling self-actualization. And this is actually kind of the contested part of the diagram because nobody really knows what this means. And that's probably because we haven't even gotten there yet, and we might one day. So I'm going to take this chart and rewrite it based on the kind of stuff I was talking about earlier. I'm going to call this the challenges of life. So our first challenge is to get our physiological needs met. And we need those things in order to just exist in the first place. As long as you want to wake up every day, you need to have good health, water, food, etc. And then when we talk about safety, we're talking about safety from an unstable environment, from the weather, from animals, from other predators, from anything out there that could potentially hurt us. So environment will be the second part there. And when we talk about belonging, obviously we're talking about belonging to a community. Well, that works out nicely. And when we talk about self-esteem, again, that stable sense of identity, which kind of leaves this last part to be, I guess, nirvana or something. Again, we haven't gotten there yet, so we don't have to worry about it. Social design is really only concerned with this particular area, the relationship between identity and community. And if community can form from the environment through this notion of trust, then identity can form from community through conversation. I remind you, this is the diagram again, conversation fills the gap between identity and community. It is how we get information from it, how we feel accepted, and how we express ourselves to it as well. So, two needs, self-esteem, belonging. So that's cool. So all of these things that I mentioned about the old forum systems are not really up to par with those things. So the question is, well, is it social? Well, yeah, they're terribly social. That's why I get really kind of frustrated when I hear everyone saying they got to be social. These are really social. There's conversation happening all the time. But is it social design in the sense that it is meeting our needs? No, it's not. So let's talk about why. All of these things that I listed about the conversation tools are very real world, but the fundamental baseline is not. In general, day to day, we are not anonymous in our day-to-day lives. We have a name. The first thing we say when we meet someone is what our name is. They see what we look like. And we usually don't hang around in a group of random people. We're usually with people we actually know and trust. So let's start there. What if we could just reinvent the whole internet to be actually around real identity? That would be great. Hey, somebody did that. Thanks to Facebook and now the hundreds of other sites that integrate with it, you can bring your little identity card with you to every service that you use. Just basic information is fine. Your name, your picture, where you work, where you live. And lots of websites are doing this now, using real identity as the baseline because they recognize the inherent value. People want to curate the things they like. People want to share who they are. You can't do that unless you're actually being yourself. That's the whole point. And the benefit of having real identity across the board is that everyone else is doing it too. So we have a trusted community of people, for one. But if we can connect to the ones that we actually are friends with, that would be number two. So like every site now is trying to get you to connect to your friends because that forms a really great baseline. Yes, you're you. These are your friends. You're all set. We get our self-esteem from identity. We get our sense of belonging from community. Off we go. So now, how do we create conversation tools that really fuel that need and close that gap a lot better? Well, I would probably guess the opposite of what we had before. So what if we could make content to be actually discoverable? There are no walls online in technology. We can break them all down. So typically, when you look at some content on the internet, you'll get recommendations in the form of like these little star ratings on like clips or something. And it says, hey, these people liked it. You should like it too. And you're like, okay, that's cool. You know, they're people. I'm a person. I figure we have something in common. But in an ideal world where we feed off of a trusted community, it would be really great if we could just figure out which of these people we actually know so that we can sort of be a little bit more influenced by it. So part of the thing about Facebook putting all the information out there is that we can actually showcase the activity from people that you know. And when you show that, say, read this, your friends liked it, well, you're far more likely to be influenced because it hits that upper right quadrant of trust, which is great. I was recently working with Airbnb on their Facebook integration, And, you know, when you do a property search for things in New York, as you're looking down, they just use your basic social graph to show you how you're connected to the host. So you're friends with the host, you're friends with a guy who's friends with the host, your friend stayed there. Whatever it is, it's just enough to, like, take the anonymity out of the experience and make you feel a little bit more like this is a trusted thing. And actually, you're probably more likely to pick that place because you have something in common. So the other thing is storytelling. We want to get people to start sharing stories about themselves, what they're doing, what they're thinking, where they've been, who they are now, who they were. And so we could have everyone do this individually, or we could just break it down and show it all in one giant activity feed, in one linear view, which would be great. You don't have to go searching for anything. It's just right there. And so many sites now are using these news feeds, these activity feeds, to show all of these stories that people are doing across the board. One linear place, you just have to sit there in your underwear, read it down. It's my morning ritual. The other thing is collections. Lots of sites now are starting to pop up to showcase collections, like Pinterest, right? Same kind of view, time-based sorting of different things that you care about, but it's more focused on the visual details, so it's a little bit more immersive. Lots of sites are using these pin views now to read everything. Pretty great. And lately, there's been a big trend towards showcasing activity. Not even storytelling, but just what are you actually doing? So on Spotify, people you're following, the songs that they're listening to. Or on Pinterest, the people that they're following, the things that they're pinning, etc. And now Facebook, with the open graph stuff, has all of this stuff in the ticker, where it literally shows you things that are happening everywhere. This guy's doing this, this guy's doing that. There's a lot of stuff going on. So all of these different ways that we can actually make content way more discoverable, everything at our fingertips, it's pretty great. Number two is it's structured data. So since the most intimate conversation is storytelling, and since we are so bad at storytelling in general, because we have all these tangents and we get distracted and we can't really be focused on our stories, we really need the structure to help us. And any good journalist knows that the foundation of a good story is the who, what, where, and the when. And then you sort of infuse the why and the how. So if we could get people to actually share their stories and capture all of this foundational information, we would be in a pretty good place. So I go on Facebook and I say that I love coffee with Nick at The Grind, and Nick links to his profile, and The Grind links to their profile, and that's some structure right there. So in this case, the who is myself and my friend Nick. The what is, well, we met up, we got together. The where is The Grind Cafe. When, just now. And why? Oh, I love coffee. Just FYI. It's short and it's sweet, but it says a lot. And especially if you're sharing with people who know you and who you also feel accepted by, that's all you really need to do right now. It works. And so the whole fundamental notion of structuring this information is rooted in this social graph, which you've all heard about. The idea that there are all these things out there in the world, all these things, all these people that you have relationships with. And that we could develop a system, a fundamental infrastructure that plays off of these connections. So I worked at Facebook. I worked at Apple. I like Boston. Boston likes me. I'm friends with Sarah. Sarah's friends with Jim. I live in San Francisco, etc. It's actually in the way that we connect to the nodes that actually help tell the stories, because they express the relationship. There's another great quote by the chair creator, Charles Eames, that says that eventually everything connects, ideas, people, objects. The connections, in the end, are the details that make that give the product its life. So the more that we can strengthen these connections, the better. Structured data, useful. Visually focused. Let's forget all of the distraction out there and just focus on who's saying it and what they're saying. So on these sites now, okay, we have a left navigation, which just filters between different conversation channels. And in the middle, we've got the actual conversation. Pretty simple. And when you look at an individual story, all you get is who said it and what they said. There's no crazy signatures or emoticons or anything getting in the way. The only thing that's actually distracting is these little feedback icons, or icons and links, which kind of is important anyway, leads to the next point, which is that there are feedback loops. When you go back to Facebook and a lot of these other social sites, you don't just get the same view every single time. You get notifications, which tells you every action that happened in the system that's related to you. Somebody tagged you in a photo. Somebody liked your post. Somebody posted in the group that you subscribe to. You can just sit here and look at it before going around and kind of discovering more stuff. And when you post stuff, you get immediate feedback. People can like your stuff. People can comment on it. People are talking to you directly, anywhere. They're not just talking to a giant room, which is great. Because the other thing is that, you know, it's not just your regular friends, but since you kind of keep in touch with everyone from your whole life, anyone you've ever met, like, anyone can actually talk to you. It kind of brings even more people into your trusted community over time, which we generally tend to lose. This year, I had 207 wall posts for my birthday. And if that doesn't give me some self-esteem, well, it didn't. I was kind of still lonely. But it was good. It was good. I liked it. And lastly, of course, real time. Thanks to technology, we have really great tools at our disposal to do Ajax and JavaScript, all in real time. And we're sitting there, and you don't have to refresh the page. You get comments, notifications. But it's actually like more than real time, because there's stuff happening all over the place, and you're seeing it all at the same time. You're talking to five different people from all different across the world. You're getting notifications about people commenting on your photo. All these things are happening. It's actually more like a hyper real time, really. Conversation is inherently a back and forth between learning from others, right? Recommendations, stories, activity, all coming into you in one place, mixed with your own sharing of your thoughts and your feedback and your storytelling. And it's all happening together in the same system really fast. They feed off of each other. And what you find is that the more sharing there is more to learn. And the more there is to learn, there is to share. And what this does is it kind of grows exponentially and creates this positive feedback loop. And surely you've heard of people saying they're addicted to Facebook or Pinterest, and this is why. Because when you get a positive feedback loop that is so intense like that, and you have this notion of how trust increases with the intimacy, personal storytelling, real-time interaction, it's really kind of a little bit of a love drug. Now, I use the term drug, which kind of has negative connotations, so I suppose this bodes the question, is this actually good for us? Drug. I mean, well, who wants to be on drugs? Some of you might, but that's outside the room. These new systems, they are rooted in the real world. They're rooted in real identity, who we really are, with a real trusted community. But all of this new stuff, all of these new ways of connecting with each other, this is a brave new world. This is totally different. It's kind of scary. But when we look at the history of communication, I mean, everything was a brave new world. So remember the telephone, right? Oh my gosh, the idea that you could have a phone in your house and people could call you in your private domain, that's pretty scary. And now, of course, today, we can't imagine not having our phones in our pockets. We want people to call us. Please, please call me. or before, like with the typewriter, the idea that anyone who could write could actually type out their thoughts and distribute them to anyone, that's pretty scary too. Who knows what they might say about you, and who knows where it might end up? And yet, of course, today, where would we be without the keyboard? Or even further back to the printing press. A lot of governments and religious organizations really kind of controlled a lot of the knowledge that was widespread. And now if anyone could create their own books, well, then what would actually happen to the order that was in society? It might go and be chaotic. So it's really not a question of whether or not this is good for us. It's just a fundamental truth. It is us. We once again have changed our environment. And like so many other things before it, we have to adapt. That's just how it goes. Just don't let it get to your head. Technology will continue to enhance communication and the freedom of expression. It's getting more and more and more. It's just happening. So the real question we can really ask is how to improve our own ability to express ourselves. Can this technology actually enhance our clarity of expression? Can we be more focused on what we want to say? Can we be more objective, more critically thinking? Can we talk about things that are greater than our own sense of self for a greater good? And secondly, can it build community? All of the people we talk to online now are people that we have met in the real world and have connected with online. But is there a way to flip it so that we can actually meet a whole bunch of people through the internet that we actually can't meet in real life because of our geographical limitation? The internet right now is very much focused on you and your personal connections with your friends. But there are other facets of your identity that have yet to be tapped. So, for example, if you are a dentist and none of your friends are dentists and you want to learn how to be a better dentist, where do you go? You either go to the real world, which is okay, or you go to those old forum systems, which really suck. Or if you really want to learn windsurfing, or you're getting really involved with the windsurfing community, and your friends don't windsurf, again, where do you go? You go offline or to these really old forum systems. So when are we going to get these points? It's funny, we see a little bit of a pendulum effect going on with the history of the internet. Before it was created, we lived in the real world, where identity was in-depth and real. We lived among a community of friends. Our conversation was mostly personal in nature. And then we swung the other way, and the internet became more popular. Identity was anonymous. There was a community of random people. Our conversation was mostly informational. We wanted to just get information, not share who we were. And then Facebook comes along, and we swing the other way. And now online identity is real. It's in depth. There's a community of friends. And our conversation is once again more personal. And in the future, perhaps we will realize that there are different facets of our identity that are each part of who we are, and that the communities that we surround ourselves with are actually the people who are most relevant to those facets. And so the conversation remains personal in nature, but also more contextual to that part of who you are. And this is actually the problem that I left Facebook to go figure out. So that's what I've been working on now for the last couple months. If you guys are interested, or anyone might be interested, just come and talk to me after. Because the fundamental thing is, it doesn't really matter like what we build or all of these different details of iconography or whatever, because social design is really a really great opportunity for us to finally close this gap between identity and community, this gap that has remained open for so long, this giant gap right here. You know, we've been able to turn our environment into a community pretty well. We live in suburbs and cities. We live among other people. We get our food and our resources pretty easily. But we really have yet to kind of close this gap and really feel a sense of self from everyone else. There's so much stuff getting in the way. And when you look really, really closely at this gap and what's actually going on, you see that we have all these things that we want to share about ourselves, all these things that we know about ourselves to be true, that provide us that stable sense of self. And everyone out there is doing exactly the same thing, sharing who they are and who they want to be and all the things that they like. And our hope is that as we communicate faster, more efficiently, more real time, that these things will actually fuse together and line up. And then we'll be actually connected. And then there won't be a separation between the two. Because when you get past all of the things that get in our way, all of the personal preferences and all of the hate and the racism and all of these things that kind of stand in our way of actually being sort of one entity, we want to answer one fundamental question, which is, do you feel what I feel? Really recognizing that we all need love, right? And we all need self-esteem, self-worth, and we all need the same things. We're each special. We're each unique. And no, we're not alone. And I'll leave you with this really great quote from Carl Sagan, which says that in all of our searching, the only thing that we've found to make the emptiness more bearable is each other. So with that, you can ask me some questions. Yes. I think you have to direct questions to the microphone, sadly, if you want to. Oh, talking to the guy who has a lot of friends. Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, people love me. I'm joking, of course. I can't even pick up a girl at a bar. Anyway, I think the fundamental root of that issue is just the fact that perhaps maybe we seem to be moving to this place where technology is too involved in our conversation. But the idea, and actually some people have been concerned about this too, because we used to write letters, you know, and we used to take our time and construct these thoughts. And now we're just sort of sending these little tiny messages back and forth, and it feels a little bit less caring, less personal, whatever. But it's a transition period. Like, right now, this is transition. This is evolution. You know, sometimes you see random creatures in the world that are just, like, super weird. They're probably in transition. They might one day be a raccoon or something. But in the meantime, they're working on it. Or teenagers, yes, in transition. So the fundamental goal is that we don't have to spend time sort of curating what we want to say. It's just a fusion, like, where I can talk to you just by looking at you. It's, like, that fast. That's the idea. So having all of these resources now, like Google in your pocket to look up questions, it's just you trying to just get more information, to just have more, to be more informed about everything at the same time. And I would actually try to say that maybe there's a little bit more of a fear of missing out, fear of not belonging in the younger crowd, because they've grown up with this. And so if they don't have their phone, if they don't have their Google thing, they like just can't function. Which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just how it is. I suppose you just gotta go with it. I don't know. Yeah. Thank you. Tell me about it. Yeah. Well, that's the issue right now, is that we are still biologically limited. Like, our brains have sort of attemptedly, like, evolved a little bit to accept more information. I think they just raised Dunbar's number from 150 to, like, 200 or something, people we can actually keep in touch with, which is okay. That's cool. But it's all happening up here. And, like, the rest of our body, the way that our senses react to the world around us is still the same that it was 300 years ago. And so nothing is really going to compare to physical intimacy of any kind. But I think it's solving another kind of need, which is just, you know, most of the world is alone. Actually, I was reading something about New York, because I'm moving to New York, and they said, like, most apartments are just single apartments. So most people spend a lot of time on their own. And so they would love to be with other people and interact. But for the rest of the time being, they don't want to be alone anymore. So this is sort of fulfilling that need, where it's like, I can be alone, sort of, but still be connected through this part of my body to everyone else. And for that reason, I think it does less for the self-esteem and just more for the sense of belonging that you're never alone ever. And that might just generally form a nice baseline of just feeling more comfortable in your own skin all the time, because you never feel like you are somewhere where nobody else is. Well, that sort of leads to my point of what I'm trying to do now. Personally, I don't really think that friends are the best indicator of who you are necessarily. I think what it has done is formed a baseline so that we feel comfortable with who we are individually in a potentially scary world of a two-dimensional internet that is sort of omnipresent, right? So when you know that there are other people there who you know, you're a little bit less scared to get involved and to be yourself. But once that's over, once we realize that everyone's on the internet, everyone's kind of comfortable being themselves, then we can stop at the friend thing and focus on people that you probably should know that actually can fulfill those needs. So things that you're actually interested in. Right now, it's kind of getting really diluted, because what is really a friend anymore? I mean, everyone still has like 50 close friends. And I guess Path is trying to do that, but you know, I've got like 1,400 Facebook friends. It doesn't mean anything anymore. It's just people that I know. So I wouldn't put a lot of stock in the length of having the friend circle, whatever, be the baseline for the years going forward. I think we'll get past it and realize that the internet is a great opportunity for us to escape the real world and to meet other people and then bring them into our real world as well. So I suppose if you were designing social products, tread the friend area lightly, use it to help people get on board with your product so that they feel more comfortable using it, but then focus on what else you can provide after that. Yeah, I actually really agree with that. When I was working on some stuff for pages, I suggested that we get more involved in who the people are that are posting behind the page. Because, I mean, really the idea behind a business or a brand is that there are people there who are all united over one group. It's a community of people who all believe in one thing, hopefully, if it's a well-run organization. And so since Facebook pages, like your Facebook profile, is just basically you being you. You're just trying to be you. You'd be like, this is me. I like this stuff. You can jump on board if you want, be my friend, that's cool, but these are the things I like. I think brands kind of need to be more like that. There's a lot of stuff in the last couple of years of just like brands are trying to get you engaged or do stuff for you, and it really should just be more about the brand. Like, if it's a really good brand and you really know what you're doing, then just be yourself. And if the people behind it are the ones that actually make the brand sort of sing, get them involved, get them to talk. Say like, oh, no, it's not this faceless corporation, it's actually Jim, and Jim's background is this, and he joined this company because he really believes in these things. So I believe in those things, too. I'm going to get involved. Puts a real face to it. There was, like, that whole issue a while ago with Nestle over, like, the use of palm oil, right? And, like, Nestle was, like, yelling at people on their page. Like, Nestle. It was just probably some, like, unpaid intern who was just, like, running their Facebook page. But Nestle was yelling at you. It was super weird. I build a bunch of community sites on my own that are geared at different industries, and we get the brand pages on there as well. But we have it so that the brand page is the central node that people can gather around, but the posts are actually made with by the individual people who run the company. So you see like the brand picture and a little bit picture of the guy who wrote it, which is great. And I would imagine that the trend is going to go that way, where we realize that brands are just another community that people are organized around that are run by people who really care, and that's really what we can connect with, not the actual conglomerate or something. We're still in the transition period from going from the personal connection back to the informational one. And so sometimes people don't want to associate their private life, which is their personal account, with their professional or hobbyist life. I think the trend it'll actually work itself out within a couple of years, just as it has now. You know, even years ago, people were still arguing against real identity, but here we are, and it kind of is the foundation now. So going forward, I think it'll shift over. But the reason why they're gravitating to the forums is because they want their own space for that. They don't really consider their Facebook friends to be part of that community. And so when you go to Facebook, you're not there to talk about that stuff. You're there to talk about your friends and how drunk you got on Saturday. The WordPlay site that I created, I rewrote a couple years ago with Facebook Connect, and it grew to like 20,000 people in a couple months. And they use the site to talk all the time. I kind of rebuilt Facebook for it, so on a separate site. And then they started using Facebook groups. And I've heard from all of them that, like, when they go on Facebook, it's kind of weird because they go to the Facebook group. They want to have, like, a special space for them that they really don't think it's the same as everyone else. And so there is a need in general to sort of separate the two, where Facebook is maybe this underlying infrastructure that provides, like, the information about you. That's cool. And, like, here's where you talk about stuff with your friends. But they really want to be over here, separate from that. And so, I mean, the idea is, like, can we make all those separate systems work? Right now, forums are the only option. I need to do it, and you need to come in. I was actually working at Google at the time that came out. I was excited for it too. It's just so hard to use. It's more about the productivity aspect of communication rather than just communication, which is supposed to be simple. I mean, if we're talking face-to-face to people, that is as simple as it gets. Can it be simpler, not more complicated? There was too much about sort of the... It was like overstructured, too much curation of stuff to remind everyone about everything and how it's all related, and it was becoming more of a task than an experience of just, you know, obtaining information. In other words, it required too much input from you to make it valuable. So, you know, again, if we're kind of designing for a non-physical reality that's not supposed to be as clunky as the real world, it's got to be way, way more simple. I should, like, have to do nothing. And that just, like, that just forced you to do too much. Yeah. I think that's it. Thanks, guys.